Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, welcome to our listeners. It's a lovely day here in San Francisco. What's been going on at your end, man?
Well, it's lovely here in London as well, Rohit. It's a bright and sunny day. We've had a fairly nice weekend, and while the lockdown measures have been eased by government standards, we still have to be very take a lot of precaution while going out and ensure that we keep adequate distance. 2 meters is being defined as adequate distance. So, yeah, we went for a walk in the park, me and my wife, and then we just cooked a Sunday lunch, and then we had some tea. And you have to do usual stuff around the house. There's quite a lot of housework to do, which we share. Settling into our Sunday. Now I'm getting into the backstretch of Sunday. And again, the anxieties of going into work or commuting into work have been non-existent for the last 6-7 weeks. And to be honest, I don't miss my commute at all. And, you know, working from home has both a set of advantages and disadvantages. What's going on? You are working from home as well, right? I take it.
Yeah. So in general, I don't have a I've not had like a routine 9-to-5 existence now since 2000. So it's been 20 years. But I would go in on average about 3 days a week, and I've we've been completely remote since at least March 13th. So that's just a shade over 2 months. I'm teaching remotely, so. A significant amount of online teaching happens asynchronously for a number of reasons. One is that, the online classroom doesn't really replicate the brick and mortar classroom. You know, if students don't want to be there, they will just nominally show up anyways. But I require a certain number of live meetings. And for those students who, for instance, the time difference makes it difficult to attend, this stuff is recorded. And then, there's a lot of other communication going on with students, one-to-one meetings on Zoom, reading drafts, clarifying questions, having, some catch-up sessions, checking in with students to see if they need any support. Our university has marshaled a fantastic list of group of supports. So that's been kind of the week that's combined with, to some extent, monitoring and supervising my son's online classes, which his school is doing an amazing job, 6 hours a day that. And then, just generally the domestic chores and so on. So the early part of this, I went out and I stocked up on a number of things, not hoarded, but stocked up, as and when I would find something that could be of use, I would, just pick it up because Amazon was, which we used for like groceries, a lot of things, was A, backed up time-wise, and B, also was running shortages. But now that's also smoothed out. California still continues to be, under the shelter in place in a more severe way than many states. But, we are blessed in the Bay Area that we have a lot of open spaces and parks, and you're allowed to go out. So yesterday I was at Mountain View in a very lovely park, I saw a good number of people. My son was cycling there, and there were a good number of people, but everyone was maintaining the social distance. So it's all good. I mean, there's massive uncertainty about what lies ahead, but no complaints.
Yeah, today in the newspapers, on the Sunday Times at least, they ran a feature about how Twitter has asked all its employees to work from home. Should they wish to going forward? Yeah. They've realized that the business is geared up. And then there's a piece, I think you sent me a piece about how working from home is going to lead to a normalization of rentals in the Bay Area, because a lot of people who work there will realize, wise up to the fact that paying a premium rent to be close to work is no longer relevant because you can be further on. Actually, one of the things we want to talk about on working from home, obviously there are various implications, but something that all our listeners would have kind of had some kind of experience of is video conferencing, which is something that was I think it was fairly novel till about 5 to 6 years ago. And I also remember that, you don't have to travel too far back in time to think that, the actual act of you know, having the video conferencing thing was new, because Skype up until recently was just, you know, audio. You couldn't have the video function, right? What you had the audio function, first it was messaging, then audio, and then, you know, it sequentially builds up. So video is the final frontier. Most people now are familiar with, you know, and there's a plethora of apps, etc., which tell you how to kind of be presentable on video. TikTok is one medium which my daughter talks about a lot, which is kind of a completely designed for people who are, you know, comfortable in operating in a video format. So how has your experience of kind of running Zoom sessions been? I mean, have you noticed the change in, you know, etiquette in terms of, you know, what you're supposed to say? Does small talk take place? How does it work for you? And how do you prepare? Do you make yourself presentable for a Zoom call? How does it, what do you do?
Sure. So first of all, you know, in general, the US is not a very formally, it's not inclined, the culture of work here is not one that's inclined to dressing very formally, unless, you know, you're in certain sections, like I think, you know, maybe investment banking and so on. And then Silicon Valley and the Bay Area are kind of known for, you know, a kind of laid back California attitude. Plus academia, academics place such a high premium, you know, on, or many academics, I shouldn't say all academics. I mean, you know, we have a certain corporate profile type of academic figure in the university, in the academy also. But many academics are, you know, they place such a high premium on individual, radical individual autonomy, independence of spirit, that that translates into, you know, dressing, I would just say, you know, very casually, to put it politely. There's actually a fun kind of meme on BuzzFeed, which people should totally watch, called Professor or Homeless. So, you know, what that means is that I can go into work with, you know, jeans and a t-shirt and a chore coat or something like that. Now, I should mention that there's a gender dimension to it. Women academics often feel that, you know, they are expected to dress much more formally to be taken seriously than men. And that has to do with, you know, larger structures of how male and female authority figures are perceived or not. So that's a good point. So for me, it's been, you know, dressing the same way that I would dress in class. For, you know, I think the students have been like fantastic, because A, these are what are called digital natives. So this technology is, you know, pretty intuitive to them. And, you know, Zoom has worked really well, because while you're in a conference with, you know, 30, 35 people, and I've had some like meetings where we've had about 30 students, the entire class, you know, show up. I'm pretty flexible about, you know, what students, you know, about having students attend and so on. You do a mix of synchronous and asynchronous classes. So they're amazing. And, you know, the etiquette is you basically stay on mute. You know, some of them keep their videos muted, some don't, some will be partly on and off. I keep my video on, and you can simultaneously, you know, use screens, you can show videos. So we actually watch live brief videos and have discussions about those issues as well. Or, you know, on our online learning management system, I'll pull up a particular, set of instructions for an assignment, and we'll go over that. Or I'll highlight, you know, a particular paragraph from a reading about the film Blade Runner and have a discussion. So it's been, knock on wood, it's been like, you know, pretty smooth going. And I have learned a lot about this, and I have taken some, you know, learnings from this process, which I think, you know, whenever we go back to full-time in-class teaching, I suspect there's going to be a hybrid learning period, which is going to be part online and part in-class. But, you know, when I move to that phase, as well as whenever 2 years down the line or a year and a half down the line, I don't know, we are back to, or in fall 2020, September, we are back to full in-person learning. I will be taking some of those things in, and I'm actually going to be using, you know, Zoom and the online modality in certain ways that I have not used before. I mean, I've used technology extensively in my courses, but some of the ways in which I have had to use it in this period are actually very effective, and they are things that I will persist with.
I think, look, you've made a series of points around, you know, how you use it, the informality of use. Let me tell you what our business has done, you know. Essentially, before Zoom came along, there were four currencies that were operating. So now you can speak in four tongues. There was something called WebEx,
yeah,
right? There was something called Skype, then there's something called Microsoft Teams, and then there is Zoom, right?
Right.
Now, each of these things comes with its own kind of ways of sharing, displaying information, taking control of screen, etc.
Yeah.
So there are, and Zoom is a licensed product. So, you know, there's, first of all, in our business, there's a hierarchy of people who have Zoom and people who do not, who work on Microsoft Teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Microsoft Teams allows us to have meetings internally, whereas Zoom allows us to have meetings externally where required, right? So there is that explicit hierarchy. And people were getting very you know, it's like low-grade workplace anxiety that, you know, you have Zoom, I don't have Zoom. Mm-hmm. So I'm a lesser mortal. And so that was the first thing. The second thing is this whole etiquette of video on, video off, right? Mm-hmm. So initially people wouldn't know. So like initially if you're having a meeting of 6 to 8 people on a meeting, mm-hmm. 5 people will be on video, mm-hmm. other people refuse to be on video, mm-hmm. right? So the 5 people who are on video will think the other 3 people are, you know, you know, just not in kind of a workplace frame of mind. They're just, because you're on mute and you're not on video, right? So you only speak when you've spoken to, which wasn't doing any favors to our team dynamic, right? In a group, right? So then the diktat came that you have to be, default setting is you have to come onto the meeting with your on mute, but you shall video, you shall have your video on.
Right? So, okay, your presence has to be registered.
Your presence has to be clocked and everybody should be able to see you, right? Mm. Now, that created a whole set of problems because there are a lot of colleagues who have complained to HR that they have multiple discussions and they find themselves being under too much scrutiny because they were saying that when I'm at work, I don't have to stare at people on an ongoing 6-hour basis, right, where every little facial gesture is open for scrutiny. So it's making a few people uneasy. So my take on it is I go video, I go on default video on mute, then I put a message in saying that, you know, guys, now I'm going to be listening in listening mode, so I'll switch on the video, switch off the video. When I speak, when I have something to contribute, I will show my face and, you know, the unmute the mic. The challenge, Rohit, is there are some colleagues who come up with a fantastic number which says that, look, do you want audio or do you want video? Because you can't get both, right? If you see me, then my broadband connection is not strong enough to support clear video, audio. But if you participate in the meeting, I will audio, right? So there are like these, it's very interesting. As we get used to using technology and working with technology, and we're still feeling our way through it, right? Like, for instance, I don't know, in Zoom, apparently you can, and you guys in academia will know this much better, you can basically put people in subgroups so that you can have private discussions. Then you can drop into those discussions and drop out of those discussions, right? Mm-hmm. You can facilitate kind of mini sessions, etc. Which is a whole new way. And I'll pick up on that. But, you know, I think my main point, as I ramble on about this, is that, you know, there are no set norms. I think people feel under great scrutiny. And people have been trying to create a backdrop that is as neutral and lifeless as possible. I haven't been able to do that because, you know, you remember the room you stayed in when you came to visit us?
Right, right.
The room has a big batik artwork.
Yeah.
So that is backdrop. So one of the natural icebreakers that I've had with many random colleagues across the world is what is it that's behind you? Because my wall is, you know, my backdrop is a door or a cupboard or something. And you've got some very interesting looking art up there. And then, you know, I've given them like a small summary lesson in casual Hinduism, which has gone down well. But no, I think, look, it's a way of work. So where do you Zoom from? Do you Zoom from your room?
So far, I have been Zooming from, I would call it a kind of office-ish or a workspacious space-ish area that we have in one of our rooms upstairs. We have this, you know, nice antique cupboard come secretaire almost. So we've got a lot of books there and this beautiful like little bit that folds out into a table. And I like it because, you know, the backdrop is there's a couple of framed photographs, framed set of like floral prints, and the lighting is good, you know, not out of vanity, but just because bright lights tend to hurt my eyes and my eyes actually get blurry with all the Zoom meetings we've been having. So I sit there and, you know, the other thing is that it's close to the kitchen. So I have two long Zoom meetings on Mondays, and I have a bit of a break in between. And sometimes I schedule, individual meetings with students then, so I can kind of nip across to the kitchen and get a cup of coffee. And, you know, it's interesting that this sort of the ice breaking is, I think, a very important part of it. So for me, the ice breaking is combined with, you know, also what I just call a general kind of like, you know, check in, because I think people want to talk and they want to share what's going on, to whatever extent they feel they're comfortable sharing their personal situation. So we don't do it for every single class, but I'd say every third class, every alternate class, I take a little bit of time for each of my classes, and I usually teach two classes a term. This term I'm teaching three, just because of some scheduling issues and I wanted to teach a new course on artificial intelligence and the human in science fiction cinema, which I'm adoring. And I thought, it actually has worked out really well in the online mode, because students can watch the films on their own. We can see clips and we have fantastic discussions. So I start every alternate class with, just checking in. Hey, just want to check in on a couple of things. One, how are you doing generally? How's the quarter going generally? And, as a matter of respect, I've told them they can speak about anything, but it's not in my place to comment on what other faculty are doing. How's the quarter going generally? How do you think the class in particular is going? Any questions, concerns, anxieties, worries, suggestions, and just anything else that you want to talk about? And it's been a good discussion. I think students, for some of them, it's been hard adjusting to working at the home space. And then, I can let them know that, hey, we can, if you want to talk more about this, get in touch with me. If there are some personal issues or challenges that you're facing, I want to be cautious because I'm not a counselor, but what I can do is I can put you in touch with the appropriate person at Santa Clara. And I have to say that in this respect, the university has been fantastic in, marshalling and mobilizing a kind of support system. So I think there's a couple of big things that have been very, very useful for me to know. One is that, two or three small tips. One tip is that you can set up a standing meeting link for a Zoom meeting, right? So the same time, 10:30 a.m. Monday every week. Yeah. But it's very hard from a student point of view when you think about it, because they have to do this for like four different classes, right? So what I do is before every class, about 15 minutes before every class, it's the same link. I just send it out again. And I think that really helps. And I've been on the other side of this equation also, because for my kids' school, I have to manage about, my wife and I have to manage keeping track of about 12 different Zoom links with all the teachers over the week. Plus, there are about six or seven different supplementary learning tools. There's education.com, there's Spelling City, there's Mathantics, right? There's, all the sort of nature and wildlife stuff that they learn in science. So they're juggling a lot. So sometimes, just sending the link again, a small thing, or just sending a strategic reminder, I think it really helps them. The second thing is keeping a fixed deadline, So 1 week, if you keep a deadline on Wednesday, and a second week, it's on Friday, and then it's Thursday at 10 a.m. So my deadlines are all Friday night, 11:59 p.m., which means that I tell them that, de facto, you have, if you're a night bird, I'm not going to be up at 2 in the morning. Three, I'm pretty flexible about deadlines. And I think, the other thing is that a couple of years ago, not that I'm a great sage or a seer or an oracle or anything, I've had the sense that American higher education, the financial model is unsustainable. At some point of time, I felt it's inevitable that 20 to 30% of the teaching is going to move online. And what will happen is that the savings will be split partly between the university and partly passed on to the students. And, people will feel that a lot of the introductory level courses can actually, which just give you a basic foundation, especially, whether it's in writing or it's just an introduction to, world cultures or whatever it is that, these are typically what are called core curriculum courses, right? A kind of required set of courses in a classic liberal arts curriculum that anyone has to do, whether you're a science major, engineering major, humanities major, social science major, business major, so on. So my sense has been that a lot of this would have eventually moved to going online, except for the fact that universities tend to be, by their nature, resistant to change and slow-moving. Now, the coronavirus crisis has kind of, you know, amplified this process. It's moved this forward to on warp speed. So I did an online training course and offered by my university, and I've been teaching online in the summers for the last few years. And one of the really important things, I think, is to have all your materials up front for the entire term. I mean, it's a heck of a lot of work, and I had to kill myself for 2 weeks to do it. But having all your materials online, links tested before the term starts, it really helps. And then, you know, you can, if you need to supplementarily, you know, add something here. I found this fantastic article in The Guardian or The New Yorker. You can always do that. So that's been, you know, my kind of experience. I would say
you've made some very interesting. So what you're saying is remind people with 15 minutes to go. That's I will definitely adopt that, because, you know, sometimes you get confused with multiple Zoom links flying around what people are talking about. Be prepared. Keep a sense of regularity in terms of if there's an expectation of things needing to get done. Don't move the goalposts. Stick to that.
Yes.
And the final thing that you said, Rohit, was that if there is any supplementary or supporting materials that have to be in place, have them available and tested up front rather than scamper around later on. I think all of those suggestions that you made are actually carry over into the business space seamlessly, because all of those things remind people, be consistent in terms of what the expectation is, and having that material kind of sounds, you know, like really good practice to me. Look, we've talked at length about, you know, how people are coping with work, and Zoom was one of the things. On the final thing that I want to talk about Zoom is, are you a person who puts on a shirt for Zoom, or are you a how does it work? Because in our case, the people have initially started off with a certain amount of modicum of formality, but now after the 6-8 week period, now it has kind of slipped. So people are now in t-shirts and sweatshirts, whereas early days, you know, people would make the effort of putting on a shirt. Have you noticed any difference, or in your line of work, it hasn't kind of come through?
Yeah, it hasn't. You know, America in particular is a very casually oriented dress place, right? And I love that about America. I actually just deeply adore it. You know, when I was in college, I used to shop at this place called Fashion Street, which was, you know, okay. A few years ago, I started actually enjoying clothes again, and to the point where, you know, there's such little pressure to dress formally that I actually started missing dressing formally. So occasionally, I would dress formally. So this is like pre-COVID era. So I actually, you know, had a lot of ties. I wasn't using them. They were in excellent condition. I kept a few strategic ones. I simplified my wardrobe. This is 4-5 years ago. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, I started, you know, getting back into dressing well. And I started enjoying, you know, certain kinds of clothes, both from a convenience point of view and from an aesthetic point of view. From a convenience point of view, I think we've spoken about this. There are these fantastic technical shirts and trousers which don't need ironing, which you can wear several times. You know, they don't pick up the odor of sweat or things like that. And then from an aesthetic point of view, I have a deep love of jackets. So, you know, just to keep things interesting for myself, I would say that, hey, I'm just going to, you know, keep rotating my jackets. And I have a jacket in, I think, every kind of fabric there is. I have a collection that's complete now, which is good in one way, but I also kind of feel, you know, when a sense of sadness that there's nothing to hunt for. Because at this point, it would, you know, it would really be what's called ayashi. So for me, it's, you know, I will typically wear a shirt. If it's a warmer day, I will wear a collared shirt. If it's a slightly coolish day, and San Francisco has, you know, four seasons in one day, you know, and I keep the window open, if there isn't too much ambient noise to interrupt a conversation, I will put a t-shirt on, but I will wear it with one of my jackets. And sometimes I'll just switch, you know, jackets out between my classes also. And, you know, in academia, there's this kind of, you know, tendency towards a certain kind of politics that many academics have. A, you're supposed to despise all consumption. B, you're supposed to be, you know, everything is commodification. B, there's a sort of idea that, you know, taking an interest in clothes is could be frivolous, right? In India, we've seen this, right? You have to be the kind of jholawala Marxist wearing a khadi kurta with a, you know, lice-ridden beard or whatever. And I don't like that. I don't feel at my best. So, you know, I think t-shirts can be a really cool, like, you know, there are t-shirts I just love. Like, I have a Led Zeppelin t-shirt I love. and or, you know, a Metallica t-shirt. I often wear those Metallica t-shirts or even a Metallica jacket to teach. And that's totally fine. But, you know, I'll make sure that the t-shirt is clean. I'll make sure the jacket is laundered. And you know, I'll just make sure that I feel like nice in what I'm wearing. I know I'm rambling on, but I remember reading something by the designer Tom Ford, who he's a genius. He has an exquisite sense of aesthetics. He's also a film director. He's made a couple of, you know, wonderful films. And Tom Ford, he was the head of Gucci, I think, and then he's had his own designer label for many years. And his stuff is exquisite. I mean, of course, you know, a Tom Ford bomber jacket or a Tom Ford, you know, shearling jacket will be $8,000. So it's stratospheric. I think it's unaffordable even for people who are, you know, way, way wealthier than I am. And Tom Ford made this remark that he said, you know, dressing well is armor. And he says that on days when he feels a little down, he says, days when I feel vulnerable and I find it hard to face the world, it's you know, interesting that Tom Ford should say that. He says that those days in particular, for me, one of the ways to, you know, cope is to dress well. And I felt that, you know, regardless of what challenges one is facing, it's just a nice kind of way in which to go out, to present yourself. So it has to do for me with care of the self, with presentation of the self, and with enjoyment. There are others who may feel that, hey, I'm wearing a pair of sweats and I'm on top of my game, and that's fine. But to me, it's also a question just personally that if I'm making an effort, and I'm not saying that I have to, you know, Nehru jacket, kamarband, turban. I don't have to, you know, dress like, you know, the Maharaja of Kanpur. But for me personally, I think the fact that I'm dressed well, you know, I haven't had a haircut in a long time, but I'm relatively decently groomed. It's also a way of signaling respect to your students, and it's signaling respect to what you do. So I'm a little old-fashioned in that way, you know.
You're making a good point. Look, I think you've outlined, you know, your working practices on Zoom, which I think, as we've traded notes on, you know, how they vary, we've traded notes on, you know, formality, informality in terms of presentation itself. So I think you've touched upon all of what you just said, you know, should resonate with people very well. That, you know, I found having a routine in terms of getting ready for work, even if I'm working from home, very reassuring. Look, I'm mindful that we've gone on for a while on this episode. It's kind of bordering about the 30-minute mark, which is pretty lengthy by our standards. So let's call it quits today. But, you know, we'd be very interested to see what our listeners have to say about their Zoom experiences. So drop us an email, theindiaexplainedpodcast@gmail.com. Keep listening. And obviously, we try and come back with as many different angles on life as we can over the next few weeks and months. Rohit, any last words from you?
No, that's about it. And I hope, like, you know, I wasn't rambling on too much. I mean, I can talk a lot about jackets and stuff. But, yeah, I'm, you know, happy that I've, you know, that this Zoom thing, I think there is this revolution of online teaching, at least. That's what I can speak for. And learning is real. I think there is tremendous value to the face-to-face in-class mode, because that's been one, you know, for thousands of years, that's actually been a fairly stable model. But, you know, I've also done online courses, and in another life when I worked in Rediff.com 20 years ago, when it was an exciting startup, not what it's become right now, which is a whole other story. I also worked on developing content and the structure for, you know, an in-house education channel. So yeah, it's been an interesting and learning experience. And yeah, I don't think I have anything else to add, but we'd love to hear from you, as Bhante says. So just keep the feedback coming.
All right, well, take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bhante would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.